Is March 23rd, and it's Friday morning. We're learning Bava Kamma at Sherith Israel, Chapter 3, Mishnah 3, is what we're looking at today. Chapter 3, Mishnah 3. Let's just remember the background. I'll do the background from the past 2 weeks in English very, very shortly. We learned at the beginning of Chapter 3 about he who places his pitcher in Rishut HaRabim. And then there were two issues there about the pitcher breaking and the responsibility for that. And then there was the matter of the pitcher hurting someone. The matter of the pitcher hurting someone is what we're going to focus on. And there was clear that the owner of the pitcher, who placed it in Rishut HaRabim, has to pay if the pitcher damages anyone. There was also a case there in the first Mishnah of Chapter 3 of walking in Rishut HaRabim and your pitcher breaks and the water or the oil or the wine inside of it falls on the road, or simply the shards fall on the road and then someone falls and is damaged by the shards or by the water or by the wine or by the oil, and the owner has to pay. It's true that Rabbi Yehuda disagreed. He said you only have to pay when you're mitkaven, when you intended, which seems to me if you intended to put the kad, the pitcher in the Rishut HaRabim, then you're responsible. But if your shards fell, if you didn't intend them to be there, then you're not responsible. That was only Rabbi Yehuda, though. The Tanna Kamma seems to say in all cases, you're responsible for your things when they cause damage in Rishut HaRabim. Okay, and then the second Mishnah began with Hashofech Maim. He who pours out his water. He cleans out the water from his store, let's say, into Rishut HaRabim. And someone falls in it and gets damaged. We said it was Chayav. And then there were three other cases in that second Mishnah. Hamatzniyat HaKotz, that's the person who takes their thorn, right? Or their shards and hides them. In Rishut HaRabim, apparently you cover them underground. But some of them got uncovered and someone got hurt. Chayav. And then there's also...
What's Chayav?
Liable. Very good. The second case there was someone who makes his fence with shards of glass sticking out into Rishut HaRabim, and someone gets hurt. Again, Chayav. And the last case there was someone whose wall fell down into Rishut HaRabim, and someone stumbled over the stones. And again, Chayav. That's the background to today's Mishnah. Ready? Here we go. Everyone have the place?
Yes.
Okay. Hamutzi et tivno vet kasho lirishut harabim lizvalim. Translation, hamutzi. Well, everyone knows the bracha, hamutzi lechem min haaretz. So what does hamutzi mean?
Bring out.
Very good. Bring out. Hamutzi et tivno vet kasho. So that word tivno, everyone looking at the word? That is a word that is a noun plus a suffix. And the suffix is a suffix of possession. It's tevin shelo. Tevin shelo. What does shelo mean?
Mine.
Mine, right? It's tevin shelo. The word tevin means straw.
No.
I don't know the difference between straw and hay.
Kashi's straw.
So what? I don't know what straw is.
The part that the animal eats.
Hay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, what does the translation say for tivno? Does it say hay?
Straw.
They didn't
know it. Or stubble.
What can we do? Stubble. Anyway, we city dwellers don't know the difference between stubble and straw and hay. So whatever it is, it is. Tivno is his hay or his straw. Vet kasho. Now, kash is very interesting because if you ask a little kid how they want to drink their orange juice, they'll tell you with kash.
What is that?
A straw. So kasho is his straw, but it doesn't mean it's plastic straw, it means organic straw. So
that's what people use to use
at a time,
I guess so. So if we read the whole thing, Hamotzi et tivno vet kasho, he who brings forth his hay and his straw, or his hay or his straw, lirshut harabim, into the rishut harabim, lizvalim. Now that word lizvalim is made up of two parts, li, zvalim. I can even divide up the word zvalim into two, zevel and with the suffix of im. So everyone knows what im means at the end of a word, right?
Plural.
Like sfarim mm-hmm. and anashim.
Plural.
It means plural, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's plural. So zevel in the plural, the word zevel
is many zevel.
It's many zevel. The word zevel means
zevelim.
So what is velim? What does the translation say?
Public domain.
No, that's not Zvalim. Oh, that's Rashid Rabim.
That hopefully is clean.
I'm sorry.
Conversion?
So Bruce says he relates to the public domain like Zevel. Zevel in modern Hebrew means garbage.
Oh. Yes.
Zevel is organically, how do you say? Zvalim, compost. Compost. That's the modern word, compost.
Here it says manure.
Mm-hmm. That's not a good translation. Compost.
Excrement.
He who takes his straw and his hay into shuturbim li zvalim. Now the li means two or four. It means in order to create compost.
So he's putting his compost pile in public.
Well, he puts his compost pile in public for the purpose of people trampling it. So that will become zevel.
Aha!
Become organically
so?
Ground up matter.
You think that's it? Or it's like the coffee houses in Israel that they put it more and more close to the road to have more and more table?
No, lizvalim, for the purpose of composting.
Well, the way I understand it here, if you bring straw, to convert into manure has to be digested first. So it means the animal will eat it and then it will provide
manure. That's why the translation is not correct. Zevel is not manure, it's compost.
Okay.
So we have to change the word. We have to change that word.
I believe that it would be mixed. You bring it to the public domain so that it is mixed with the animal's waste, because that's what would bring it together and would... not just the rain, but that too will break it down.
Guys, it's totally illogical. If there's a pile, comparison. An animal will walk around it. If there's a pile, people will walk around it. Nobody will walk on top of a pile.
No, but
you live in the wrong century, I think.
Yes, I think you do.
Sure.
Yeah,
that's the movie we saw yesterday.
Which movie?
Midnight in Paris. That you go to a different
yeah, we're going
because
back to
when
a
we
time.
Were.
We have to put ourselves.
You know,
we were
young hippies, and we had.
Oh, I was a young hippie.
I was not a young.
And you were not a young.
No, I was never a young hippie.
But I was a young hippie, and
but
we grew our vegetables, and we had compost, and we had leaves and everything else. No, you don't. But what we did is also mix in vegetables and things.
But you don't walk
in order
a pile and it's hot. People avoid it.
In order for the leaves and so on.
You don't
I had a compost pile. People don't do that with compost pile. It actually ruins the compost pile.
I'm giving you a
myself.
Okay, so it looks like to convince you, we'll have to read the sheet I gave out.
Can I read my translation?
Yes.
Yeah, but I don't care about translations. It's only a translation.
but there's meaning. But there's meaning to this translation.
Okay.
If one bring forth, bad English, his straw or stubble into the public domain for conversion into manure.
That's what we said.
And another is injured thereby.
Okay, that's the idea for conversion. Look at the Braita that we brought on the sheet that I gave out. We're not going to learn the Braita now in its entirety, but just for the particular matter here of what the reality is. So look at the end of the first line in Hebrew, the last four words.
From the first one? Here?
Yes, the first one, it's in B on my sheet. Okay. The first line in Hebrew, the last four words, Adam Motzi Zivlo.
Where do you have Adam Motzi Zivlo?
Adam, it's the
end of the first line in Hebrew.
End of the first line.
First line.
Yeah. Adam Motzi Zivlo.
In the heavy print.
L'Rishut HaRabim.
I see it, Adam.
Yeah.
Which means Adam, Motzi is the word Lahotzi, right? A person brings forth his zevel, and then we have an abbreviation, Lamed Resh Hey Resh, Lirishut HaRabim, to the public domain.
What did you say?
Caroline, you don't. Let me help you.
No, I have the pledge.
Okay.
No, I have the right pledge. I'm just asking what the definition is
of zivlo.
Right.
Zivlo is zevel. His zevel.
What is zevel?
We said it's manure. Garbage. It's compost.
Oh,
garbage.
Okay. I forgot.
Okay. Adam mutzi zivlo l'reshut harabim. A man brings forth his zevel to reshut harabim. Vitzovro. That means piles it up. Kol shloshim yom. For a period of 30 days. Literally, kol shloshim yom. All 30 days. So this says a man takes out his zevel to Reshut Rabim and piles it up 30 days. And we're reading this now for the next few words. You ready? Kedei Sheyehe Nishof Biraglei Adam Uvraglei Behima. Translation, in order. That's Kedei Sheyehe, that it will be Nishof, ground up Biraglei Adam, through the feet of people.
Are you sure Nishof is ground?
Uvraglei Behima, and the feet of animals.
And the next verse is the funniest.
That's all we're going to read right now. If you want to look at the English translation says that everybody's entitled to take out his foliage, they call it foliage here, into the public ground, and heap it up there for the whole period of 30 days so that it may be trodden upon by the feet of men and by the feet of animals. So at least according to the Braita, we should understand that what people used to do is to take out their stubble, their hay and their straw to the Reshut Rabim, spread it around there, not to get rid of it, but actually to improve it.
Right, it's a mitzvah. To do a good deed, to build the road, to keep rebuilding the road.
No, make their crops grow.
Well, better.
The idea is, I understand this is really foreign to us, because I don't have such a reality in my life.
Did you say the public domain in a field, you mean?
No, the public domain. I take out my straw and my hay that's left from the fields.
Right.
I take it and put it in the road in front of my house. I put it in 635 because I want all the cars to run it over. And then after 30 days, I'm going to go collect it. And it's now usable for organic compost for the fields.
So you take it back.
Yeah,
I take it back.
I know.
Right? In other words, in its present form,
as a fertilizer.
In its present form as straw and hay, it's not ground down enough to be usable to plow back into the field. It won't be organically degraded.
Take it back.
But after the animals.
No, it's good.
This is the most exciting class we ever had, right?
Right.
That's the loudest class we've ever had.
This is almost like something I observed in China. A major highway shut down for hours because the rice farmers were drying their rice on the highway. It was a 110 degree day.
Ah, okay.
Interesting. They were drying their rice on the highway.
That's a good idea.
Highway.
I'm going to try that.
Actually,
next time you get to your rice paddy and get some.
I'm not crazy about China, but some of their ideas are good.
So now back to the Mishnah.
Not too many.
No.
Okay.
Back to the Mishnah. We'll read the first line again. Hamotzi et tivno vet kasho lirashut torabim lizvalim. He who brings forth his hay or his straw to reshut torabim lizvalim for the purpose of making it into zevel.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I apparently through the grinding down process that's accomplished by the legs of animals and the legs of people. V'huzak behen aher, and was damaged through them someone else. So one of the people who's doing me this favor of grinding it down by walking to Sheret Israel, to Daven in the morning, he falls. And he hurts himself. The halakha is chayav benizko. I am liable in his nezek.
Because you still own it.
I still own it, right? I put my stuff into Rashut Rabim.
I suddenly remember in Israel, the Persian rug owners, when I was a kid, the Persian rug stores. The Persian rug improves if you beat it upside down. So they would put their Persian rugs upside down on the street so people would walk on it.
That's fantastic. I want to tell you that since last night, I've been thinking, what type of example could I find in modern life like this Mishnah? And that's fantastic. That's fantastic.
That's still not modern life, but
yeah, that's pretty
that's
close,
ancient,
right? That's a great example.
My childhood. Yeah.
Okay.
Don't tell me.
Okay, so they're putting the rugs out for their own benefit, and they want to get a free ride on the legs of the people who are passing.
We are probably the same.
When you see a carpet,
she's ancient.
From one side it looks one way, and from the other side it looks different. So if they put it like that, they probably go straight. The fibers go straight,
right?
You can see it the same way both sides.
It flaps them,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So you don't have that big difference when you look one side to another.
You do have the difference, and the difference is good because one side is very solid and one side is the fluffy side.
I have a carpet in my house. From one side, I don't like it, so I look at it from the other side. Looks better.
Ah, you mean this way?
Okay, so it was only an example. It's not not the subject here.
Thank you.
Don't forget. Come Sunday at 7 o'clock at the Cantorial concert.
Okay.
Guess who will sing?
Can't enter.
Beside.
Oh, you.
Me.
Okay, beside it's you.
Rabbi.
That's chutzpah.
Always.
Okay.
Always.
Yeah.
Always.
That's okay.
So continue. The next phrase says, V'chol hakodem behen zaha. Do you see those words? V'chol hakodem behen zaha. Let's read it first literally and then understand it. V'chol hakodem behen means all that comes first in them or for them. Kodem means earlier. Anyone who comes earlier for them, zaha.
At that point, he cannot be chayav.
Wait a second. Good issue. Zaha means merited or means acquired.
Or
acquired.
Or
what it means is the first one to take it acquires it. What does your English translation say?
Takes possession of it.
What's the whole phrase? Before
and anyone who comes first,
anyone who comes first gets possession. In other words, this person who put his straw and his hay into Rashut Rabim in order that people walk on it and trample it and it gets better for him, well, not only is the owner culpable for any damage caused to someone who falls, but even furthermore, anyone who wants can take it and not give it back.
So that's healthcare.
Why?
Very good.
That's what
because you're using healthcare. The public domain.
It relinquishes. Mm-hmm.
You are illegitimately
invading
the space of the public domain for your private use. Mm-hmm. So if anyone wants to take it, they can take it.
So that's what he has to pay for. That's his...
No. Like,
you know.
I mean, the person who puts it for his own benefit, but he relinquishes, like she said, half of it for the advantage of having the public use it and help him.
Mm-hmm. Well, the person... You mean... Well, let's
that's
go back.
The owner has to pay that to have the public help him. No, it's like a payment.
Well,
I think it's like a punishment.
No,
because they take it from you. I mean,
right.
If you put it in the public domain, then don't expect that.
That's right. You have no. You have no expectations.
In Israel.
You can well, it's not like the Persian rug. What I am imagining is that you have a small thoroughfare, and then all people bring their straws and so on and leave it there. They have to leave it there for.
It makes no sense that you put it in front of your house. I have not finished. Sorry.
One second, please. So they leave it there, and then they go away. And so it takes maybe hours, maybe days. And when you come, you probably take the amount of manure that you need. And it may be in the same place that you left it. But if somebody came and took yours, then you take the other person's. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but they don't mention here, but only one person. And you're mentioning every...
Yes. But everybody brings. It's not just one person.
Arena.
Because everyone has.
So how would they schlep it such a big distance? They put it in front of their house.
So the truth is, these things are not clear. The Gemara discusses all this. To what degree was this custom common? To what degree is it uncommon? But let's go back and get some terminology here. Mm-hmm. So it was mentioned punishment, was mentioned hefker. So let's just say and put on the board the proper word here.
She said punishment.
No, also Carol Ann said. And you're both right. In other words, the rabbis are punishing, if you will, the person who improperly uses Reshut Rabim for his own personal usage. And the word is hefker. Let's put that word on the board. Hefker means ownerless. Hefker. Hefker. And the rabbis are making your straw and hay ownerless. And that is indeed a punishment.
But then hefker. You shouldn't be paying for them.
Very good. We'll get to that point in a minute. Good morning. So, instead of calling it a punishment, we're going to call it a fine. The Hachamim are fining you by making your possessions hefker. And the word for a fine is kanas. Right? This is a kanas. Just like when you get a traffic ticket, you have to pay a fine. That's a kanas. So here the rabbis are imposing a kanas, and the kanas is that you lose your straw and hay. Hefker. And Ilana now just pointed out, oh, it isn't. Bob took the Mishnah with him. Go get that man. I wanted to give it to Miranda. And
we need to give it to Matthew. Here,
he's got another one.
Here. Okay. Okay. So, okay, let's go here. Ilana just brought up a problem. There seems to be an internal contradiction within this one line of Mishnah. So, if no one heard what you said, now I'll ask the question. What's the internal contradiction? What did we read? You bring your straw and hay into a shoot.
For me, the contradiction is that the owner relinquishes, and I wrote it here, the owner relinquishes ownership, possession, but then he's liable.
Right.
He's liable if anybody gets hurt.
How could he be liable if it's not his?
That's right.
Because he put it out in the public domain where it is not supposed to be.
Well?
Yeah, but the minute I put it there, it's no longer mine.
Oh, but what we...
Well, no. You don't have corporeal possession.
What is corporeal?
Corporeal.
Bodily possession, but you have, but an obligation, a legal obligation is created by you placing it in the public domain.
Okay.
Rabbi,
that's the fine. You could say it in a number of different ways. The fine is that I have to pay, even though it's not mine. You can say it like that. Or you can say that it's mine until someone else takes possession of it.
Yeah.
Right?
Rabbi, it seems to me that it should be halfway in Reshut Rabim, like in the, right in front of his house. Not on 635, but on the sidewalk.
Well, but no. But wait, if you go and take your waste and put it on 635, you have relinquished corporeal possession, but you are responsible for putting a stone in the before a blind person.
No, I agree totally. My question is different. Is it the same rule if I put it on 635 or if I put it on the sidewalk in front of my house?
It's not the sidewalk because the animals have to tread on it. It's not just people treading like a carpet. It is the animals have to tread on it.
But the animals are walking in front of your house.
But it says in the public domain.
It is in the public domain. So the animals and
No. My question is not this. There's grades of the public domain.
Do you remember how you refer to the grades of public domain? We learned this a few months ago.
Grades.
Yeah, how do you say it in Hebrew? In the Lashon of the Mishnah, we talked about Sidei Rishut Rabim, the sides of Rishut Rabim. And there are cases in which you're allowed to put things in the side of Rishut Rabim, but you're not allowed to put them in the full Rishut Rabim.
That's what I thought.
So in this case, if there's a clear kanas, a fine, for putting your straw and your hay here, it implies... It looks like you shouldn't have put it there. That's why there can be a kanas.
Kanas is a fine?
Yes. And since
what's a hefker?
That means ownerless. Okay. The rabbis made it ownerless, and that is the fine. Right? So it looks like this is really Rishut Rabim. You are disturbing people from walking and animals, and it's causing a problem, a takala, right? A stumbling block, what we would call in the language of Mizkin a boar. Right? A boar in Rishut Rabim. So what's happening is you have to pay, and also the rabbis find you by making it ownerless, at least in the sense that if someone else comes, they get possession of it. Okay, so let's go on. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer. Right? Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer. Kol mekalkalin b'Rishut Rabim v'hiziku hayavin l'shalem. Translation, all who damage in Rishut Rabim, now damage doesn't mean that you physically caused damage. It means that you obstructed, you did something negative, you caused problems for Rishut Rabim. You are mikalkel, right? That's the word, mikalkel. Vihiziku, and it hurt someone, hayvim l'shalem, has to pay. What that seems to be is simply a summing up of what we already learned. First we had an example, a prat, and then we have a klal, a general rule.
Is that the general form?
Yeah, because he says obstacles.
Kol mekalkalin.
Mekalkalin.
Anyone who does improperly in Rishut Rabim and cause damage, hayvim l'shalem. Let's read on to the next line. V'chol hakodem behem zacha. And anyone who comes and takes possessions of it, gets it. In other words, that's the last words of Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, and the exact same words that the Tanakhama used.
Then why do we bring both?
That's a very good question. The Gemara asked the question, what could this be adding?
Well, because he says obstacle. He does not see, he sees the straw, it seems like, he sees bringing the straw and the stubbles into the public space as an obstacle at all times. And so he wants it to be a liability.
But that's what the Tanakhama said. That's the same thing the Tanakhama said.
No, because it seems like... No, there is a difference. Let me see what I wrote.
Of course there's a difference. The question is a different significance.
Let me see what I wrote.
But while you're looking, we're going to read on. The last sentence of the Mishnah is extremely interesting. The last sentence says ha-hufech. That's the first word, hufech. Does anyone see that word?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Does anyone recognize besides Ilana the word?
Yes. To turn over.
Yeah, to turn over, like in Purim. Mm-hmm. Purim we say nafochu. Purim is all about turning things topsy-turvy.
Right.
Nahafoch. Right. Nahafoch, that's ha-hufech. He who turns things topsy-turvy. He who turns things over. Ha-hufech et hagalal birshut harabim. He who turns over the galal in Rishut Rabim. Galal means something very similar to zevel.
To zevel.
What is zevel? How can you ask what is zevel? We just had that a few minutes ago. Okay. I will throw the chalk at you.
The sanitation department.
Right. Galal might mean zevel in a more decomposed fashion.
Yeah.
He who turns over the compost pile in Rishut HaRabim, v'huzak behen aher, and got damaged someone else in it, Hayab Benisko.
You know,
wait a second, Alia. Is the person gets damaged, the person who turned over the Zevil is Hayab Benisko. So please think about that. What's going on here? What does it have to do with our Mishnah? What sense does it make?
It makes sense.
It's an intervening, is another intervening cause. In other words, if all of us walk by and just say, ooh, that stinks, we're okay. But if I decide that I want to help the
odor,
if I want to help the decomposition the dung pile, and I dig my shovel in, turn it over, and turn it over.
Right.
I am also adding to the danger that was put out by the original depositor.
You're changing.
I'm not changing. I came along and I butt in. If you be a Budinsky, you're going to share in the responsibility.
I think there's more than that. You claim ownership.
Ah. Mm-hmm. Right. Bruce is right, and Ilana is building upon Bruce. Mm-hmm.
But you don't... No, it's not ownership.
If you have an interest in the composition,
it doesn't say anything about the fact that I'm going to bring my wheelbarrow and take some of it and dump it in my field.
But you did something
just
to the process.
I'm an interloper. I'm butting in.
Okay, you're butting in. That's very good. Let me ask Bruce a question. If the person who is hofechet agalal, who turns over the compost pile, he is chayav.
Yeah.
That implies that someone else is not chayav.
The original owner
mm-hmm. is not Hayab. Mm-hmm. Why is the original owner no longer Hayab?
Because he lost control.
Mm-hmm. So now I want to ask
both ways, then.
A question in the Mishnah. When we say that the person who overturns or turns over the compost pile, he becomes Hayab, what one word that we read earlier in this Mishnah describes what happens legally when the person comes and puts his pitchfork into the compost pile. One word from the Mishnah.
Can you say it again?
What one word mm-hmm. that we learned earlier in this Mishnah today mm-hmm. describes what happens legally when the new person comes and puts his pitchfork into the compost pile to turn it over?
No hefker anymore.
It's chazakah.
One word that appears in this Mishnah.
Motzi.
Not hefker.
Motzi.
Zvalim. Konos.
What did you say?
Konos.
Zaha.
No, I was going to say
Zaha.
I could say you get a
konos. Acquires.
Yes.
Acquires.
Acquires. I was just saying,
right. Yes,
fine.
Let me give you a today example.
Yes.
In the BP case, they have discovered that BP threw some chemical and sand on a pristine beach that had been destroyed and said, you see, we cleaned it. Mm-hmm. And they're getting hit double for that. Mm-hmm. Because they're trying to pass it off like they did something to it. So this is...
I'm going to give another example.
They own it.
I'd like to use Ilana's example. So the owner of the Persian rug store takes his rug, puts it out in front of the store, turned over, so that people walk on it, and Ilana claims that improves the carpet. Fine. I come by, I say, those people who own this store, they're so impolite. Look what they're doing to Rishut Rabim. It's causing people all these problems. So I take the rug and I drag it to someplace else. As I say, I'm going to take the rug. I put it someplace else and someone falls over it.
You're still
at that point, you're liable.
So I'm liable now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Still in the public domain.
So that's basically what the Mishnah is talking about. Let's go to the questions that I brought and see a little bit of background here.
May I just bring the thing that bothers me? I'm still bothered by that old camel that fell and died in the public domain.
So if we allow the corpse
of a camel to stay in the public domain and we begrudge a little compost pile, what are we doing here?
This is not a little compost pile. Have you ever seen a bale of hay?
The size of the room.
When you first brought it up, I didn't have an answer. I still don't.
That camel stays heavy on me.
Okay, so the first question I asked on the sheet that everyone has, to what two earlier cases in this chapter is the case of Hamutzi et Tivno vet Kasho similar? That's certainly true. Ilana says, look at the beginning of Mishnah Bet, the second Mishnah, Hashofech Maim Birshut Harabim. He who throws his water, who spills his water, who empties out his water into Rishut Harabim, when someone else gets damaged, Chayav. This case seems very similar to that. Indeed. What other case is our case similar to from this chapter? Ilana suggests that it's similar to a fence that fell, but there it fell. In our case, you put it there. Our case is much worse.
That's true.
Where else in this chapter did you put? So perhaps you can say it's that case, someone who fences his fence with shards that stick out into Rishut Rabim. That certainly is good. Right? There's another case.
You leave your jar out.
Your jar, right? The very beginning of the chapter. Hamaniach et hakad. He who puts his pitcher in Rishut Rabim. So all these three cases seem to be similar. Whether you put your pitcher in Rishut Rabim, whether you threw out your water in Rishut Rabim, whether you have little shards of glass jutting out into a sutra beam from your fence. In all these three cases, it looks similar to the matter of taking out your tevin and your kas into a sutra beam.
Except that you intend to take back your tevin.
How did you know I was about to say that? Very good. So Ilana answered question two before we asked it. Question two, what further description is found in this case that is not found in the two similar cases? What one word in Hebrew, in our case, adds a further description that's not found and not true in those earlier cases?
Chazaka?
No, in the Mishnah. That describes the case. I'm talking about describes the case, not describes the law, but describes the case, the situation.
I wrote for conversion into manure.
Very good. Lizvalim. For the purpose of making it into compost.
Mm. Oh, he had a purpose when he put it out.
He had a purpose, right. In the case of someone who puts his pitcher in Rishut Rabim, he did it probably for 5 minutes. He just didn't have anything else to do with it. Or the person who put his water in Rishut Rabim just wanted to get rid of it. But this guy, he's putting it there in order to use Rishut Rabim for his own purposes and then take back his compost, right? So he's really, as we can say, taking advantage of Rishut Rabim,
benefiting
in a fashion that just might be illegitimate, and therefore he's being fined for it, as we learned in the law. And of course, my third question is, how does this further description serve to distinguish this case from the similar case in Mishnah 2? Well, we just said, Mishnah 2, you threw the water out and you didn't want it back. Dirty water. In our case, you want your stuff back.
That's right.
It is problematic to me because I think some people at that period had small lots. So they didn't have a place in their own field to make a compost pile because that will take away from a crop possibility. So the only place they had is the public domain.
Well, they used the public domain because of the feet of men and animals. That is very important to the...
You're right.
To the...
to get the fertilizer.
To get the manure.
Pack it down.
Yep. They didn't have the people
to sit there and aerate.
I don't see that as a fine. I see that as a compensation of the person who put the manure. I'm going to compensate the people who helped me.
That's what I said originally.
He's going to compensate them by paying for
the job. This thing for people to help me convert my product into the final product. So I'm going to pay the people to help me doing it. So I don't see that as a fine to me. I see that I am compensating the people who are helping me.
We're referring to the fact that someone else can take it.
Yeah, that too. I'm willing to give some.
Who said some?
Well, if, take the whole thing.
If someone takes the whole thing,
yeah.
That's certainly
a risk that I take.
Me, the person who owns this, I have no interest in giving it all up. But the Mishnah says that I give it all up. That's a fine. Uh-huh. It's not in my interest. I'm not compensating them. I'm actually getting pretty angry with the person who takes it.
Yeah, I don't see anything that was here in the Mishnah that says that I will give something such and such to such and to.
Certainly not willingly.
No.
Right? Let's go on.
This is just personal business.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's the answer to question four? Is the above mentioned difference, in other words, I want to get it back, more of a reason for culpability or less of a reason for culpability?
More.
Yeah, I would think more, right? Yeah.
Because he still owns it. He intends to own it. Mm-hmm.
So you might say that it's a kal vachomer, and all the more so. If the person who throws his dirty water into a shudra rabim is liable, I might think all the more so. If I throw my dirty straw and hay into Rishut Rabim, because in this case, the second case, I'm using Rishut Rabim not just as a garbage bin, I'm using actually to make money.
To benefit.
To benefit. Right. Okay. Questions 5 and 6 we did already. 5 is when the Mishnah says that Kol HaKodem Bem Zaha, all that come and get it, got it. What's the legal description of what the halacha is doing to the ownership of the tevin and the kash? The answer we said, the legal description is, it's on the board.
Hefker.
It's becoming ownerless. And then number 6, what's the legal description of what the halacha is doing to the owner of the tevin and the kash? That's also on the board.
Knas.
Fining. Number 7. What is the relationship between the words of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the material that preceded? We already said that he is summing up in general terms. He's giving the principle for the detail, for the example that came earlier.
Is Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel later than Rabbi Meir?
Why do you mention Rabbi Meir?
Because you told us once Stam is Rabbi Meir.
Very good. Right, Stam Mishnas Rabbi Meir, we assume that the source is Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Oh, goodness gracious.
I'm very bad about the history.
Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel and Rabbi Meir.
I think they are kind of...
Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel is earlier, isn't he?
That's what I thought, so how can he sum up Rabbi Meir if he's earlier?
Yeah, that doesn't matter, because it's not that Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel originally summed up Rabbi Meir, it's that the editor of the Mishnah arranged the two materials here, first the example, and then the klal, and then the principle. It still is a question here, it's not clear to us, why do we need the principle if we're already... have the example.
Exactly.
But I don't know a good answer to that. Let's look at questions 8 and 9. Again, this is review. Why is the case of Alfechet HaGalal brought after the words of Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel? How is this case different than the cases that preceded? I mean, we've answered already. This is just review.
Yeah, because it's ownership.
Because it's
a reclaim, changing the ownership. Really.
Right, it's changing of ownership. Now, after we already said Kol HaKodem Behem Zaha, anyone who comes first and takes it gets
it. Hefker.
Then we give an example of that actually happening, which is the guy who comes and is Hofech et the Galal, and he turns over the compost pile. In doing so, he shows that he wants it.
It must have been a very common practice, because otherwise, why did they bother to mention it?
It certainly happened, right?
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. It did happen. Okay. Question 9 we also did already. This is just review. If ha-hofech et ha-galal, someone who turns over the compost, is responsible for the damage, who is implicitly exempted from responsibility, and that we said, right? The owner... loses his compost pile, but he also loses his liability.
So can't we say that the minute you offer the galal, you got your chazaka on that stuff?
The word is not chazaka. The word is ba'alut.
What's the difference?
Ba'alut is ownership. Chazaka is one of many means of acquiring ownership.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Let's look at the braita from the Talmud that I brought in the sheet here. And it says as follows. I'm going to read it in Hebrew, and you have the English right underneath it.
Are you talking about C or B?
I'm still in B. We read it earlier just to talk about the reason that people put their things into Reshut Rabim. Now we're going to see the whole context there. So it begins with two Hebrew letters, Gimel Mem, which is an abbreviation for Gemara. So here in the Talmud, after they quote the Mishnah, then they bring Gemara, which is commentary on the Mishnah. And the first word of the commentary is lema, which means let's say. The root is yud mem aleph, actually.
No, aleph mem resh.
In Hebrew.
I know.
But the point is that yud mem aleph is equivalent to aleph mem resh. In Hebrew, Aleph Mem Resh, Lemor Amar said. Mm-hmm. Here it is Yud Mem Aleph in Aramaic,
and
Lema means to say. In other words, let's say, we suggest to say. Let's Lemor. Let's say that Matnitin, and the word Matnitin is abbreviated. You only have here the first four letters, but the full word is Matnitin.
And that's in the Braita, right?
Matnitin means the Mishnah. Let's say
we are bringing in Braita before.
Wait a second. Let's say that Matnitin de lo kerebi Yehuda. The word Rebbe is also abbreviated. Let's say that the Mishnah we just read is not like Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, I'm about to bring you Rabbi Yehuda to show you that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't agree with this Mishnah. So that's our suggestion. It's what we call a hava amina, right? A suggestion that will later perhaps be rejected. Lema matnitin de lo k'Rabbi Yehuda. Let's say that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda. It doesn't reflect Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. De Tanya. What does de Tanya mean?
In Braita.
De Tanya.
As it says.
Right. As it says in a Braita. De Tanya. As it says in a Braita. And here's the Braita. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Bisha'at hotza'at zvalim. Which literally means at the hour of the taking out, hotza'ah is lohotzi, is motzi. At the hour of the taking out of garbage. And again, garbage is not a good word. It's referring here to the stubble left from the fields.
Yeah.
B'sha'at, hotza'at zvalim, at the hour of the taking out of stubble, adam motzi zivlo, the reshut rabim. A man is allowed to take out his stubble to Reshut Rabim, Vitzovro, and pile it up, Kol Shloshim Yom, all of 30 days. Kedei Sheheni Shof, in order that it'll be trampled, Beraglei Adam, under the feet of men, Uberaglei Beima, under the feet of animals. And the last few words of the line, Sha'al Menat Kain Hinchil Yehoshua Et Ha'aretz. Translation, Sha'al Menat Kain, with this condition, Hinchil, caused to inherit, Yeshua et Aretz. Under these conditions, Yeshua caused the Jewish people to inherit the land.
To fill it up with garbage.
Let's just think about this a second. Now, after we went through the language, so what are we saying here? We're saying that it's allowed for Israelites to take out their stubble into Reshut Rabim for 30 days, not for more than that.
Which means
it's okay.
Opposite to the Tanakama.
And this is one of the conditions under which Yeshua caused the Jewish people to inherit the land. This is what you would call, I don't know how to say it in English, we have in Hebrew, it's, and right, in English it's called the city ordinance. The city ordinance.
What is it in Hebrew?
Takanot Ezer Eroni.
Oh,
It's bulk trash.
Say it again?
Bulk trash.
Bulk trash, right? All right, bulk trash is a good example. Because yes. Dallas City says that once a month, I think for 48 hours, is it that I have?
No,
24, just
it's
24.
No, it's
yeah,
more.
You can have about 72 hours.
Yeah, 72,
right?
You can put it out.
I'm allowed to put my zevel out.
Yes.
And I'm not violating the city ordinance that you can't put your zevel in Rishut Rabim. It's in Rishut Rabim, right? It's in this. It's on the sidewalk. But that's okay for a certain amount of time.
And I'll give you an example. I once saw my neighbor, I never remember the dates, and I saw my neighbor put a bulk. And I said, oh, wonderful. So I put mine, and she and I were called to court, and it was a big thing. God. And it was simply 6 hours ahead of the schedule.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
Right. And obviously, the city has an interest that people do not put their bulk trash out too early, because you need the sidewalks to walk on. On the other hand, the city does have an interest that it's put out there when they're going to collect it. They don't want it piling up in other places. It'll be in vacant lots, etc., etc., etc. So why do we say this matter, that under this condition Yeshua caused the Israelites to inherit the land? Because in a formal sense, what's being done is illegal. You're putting your stuff in the Rishut Rabim. But it's a city ordinance that allows you to do that temporarily at a certain time, because that's a way that society will function better. It's as if everyone agreed that under these conditions we inherit the land. We're giving up, each person gives up his right to Rishut Rabim for that certain amount of time for the good of society. That's what it means that Hinchil Yeshua et Ha'aretz, under these conditions.
So at that point.
So now Ilana says. Right, and that what you're saying is what the Gemara says. In other words, here's a Braita in the name of Rabbi Yehuda that says for 30 days, apparently 30 days a year, I think, everyone has the right to put out their bulk trash for the purpose of it being ground down by the feet of the animals, the feet of the people. But the Gemara said, what did the Gemara say at the beginning? Let's say that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda. Because there seems to be a certain disagreement between the Mishnah and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, you're allowed, only once a year, but you're allowed. And presumably, if you're allowed, then there's not going to be a kanas, and there's not going to be liability. Right? I would assume that.
Unless our Mishnah is for the other 11 months.
How did you know?
I just thought.
Right, it's logical. But at this point, we're saying there must be a machloket between the Mishnah and the Braita. The Braita says it's allowed, which again implies no kanas and no liability. Whereas the Mishnah said that, the Mishnah didn't say it's forbidden, but the Mishnah said that if you do it, there's liability and there's kanas of losing it. So it looks like there's a machloket here. So what is the Gemara going to do? It could say, okay, there's a machloket. That's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, and that's the Mishnah's opinion. It could be. But the Gemara goes into a long discussion. You can see now we're getting to three dots. I left out a lot of Gemara. There's a big discussion here, which is pretty complicated. Mm-hmm. And it's an important discussion, right? This is an important question for Dallas City or any other city. Are you allowed to do this or not allowed to do this? And anyway, the conclusion, or at least one of the conclusions after the three dots is, Amar Rav Nachman, Livriyut. Livriyut. Matnitin, again the word matnitin is abbreviated.
In the Mishnah.
Matnitin, which means our Mishnah, shelo b'sha'at hotza'at zvalim. Our Mishnah is not at the time of hotza'at zvalim. Our Mishnah is talking about the 11 months when you're not allowed to do it. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda is talking about the 30 days when you are allowed to do it. And apparently we designate 30 days a year when you're allowed to do this at a certain season, when I guess people have the need to do it, when the stubble has come in from the fields. And then the Gemara has three words.
The
Rabbi Yehuda he. And it's Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, we can say that the Mishnah is not arguing against Rabbi Yehuda. Rather, the Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda. As long as we say that our Mishnah is talking about the other 11 months of the year.
So do they mean that the Mishnah is originally Rabbi Yehuda's? That's what they say for Rabbi Yehuda?
The Mishnah can
be attributed to Rabbi Yehuda, but not necessarily.
Right, it can be in accord with Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, as long as we limit it to 11/12 of the year. That's one suggestion that the Gemara makes. But there's another suggestion it's going to make. The other suggestion is Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi is a different way of reconciling the Mishnah and the Braita.
Wasn't he one of the Rashi Yeshivot?
Most of these rabbis were.
No, I mean the head of they were not Avbetin and all that in Babylonia, were they?
You have, you don't have the structure of the Sanhedrin, but you have Rashi Yeshiva.
That's it.
So anyway, Rav Ashi Amar, Tivno Vekashotanan. Translation, his straw and his, what did we call it? Hay, Tanan. Tanan means we learned in the Mishnah. That's right. He's pointing out the Mishnah is talking about specifically hay and straw. In other words, when you see the contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braita, and you come to reconcile it, don't say the difference between the two is in the timing. This is 1 month, this is 11 months. Say the difference is in the type of junk that you put into Reshut Rabim. Our Mishnah, when it said that it's you're fined and you're liable, it was specifically for straw and hay. Whereas when Rabbi Yehuda said you're allowed to put stuff out, it wasn't about straw and hay, it was about other stuff. And why is straw and hay worse? Mishum de misharake, because it's slippery.
Misharake?
I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce it. Don't,
okay.
Don't depend on me, because it's slippery. In other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're allowed once a month to put out some stuff that has to be ground down, but not straw and hay, because that really would really cause damage to people because they slip on it.
But you are allowed. That is still. Is that only 11 months? All of the 11 months you can put things out?
According to this, to Rav Ashi.
According to Rav Ashi, you can, for 11 months, you can put out anything into the street, and it's okay.
Except for
the straw and stuff. And right. Then for 1 month, you can put out the straw and stuff.
No. According to Rav Ashi, no. According to Rav Ashi, you can never put out straw and hay.
Oh. So never ever. So there is not a season for it. But when you read up, it says that there is a season that everybody does.
But that's a season that's not for straw and hay, according to Rav Ashi.
You have conflicting opinions as to that 11th month or 12th month. Yeah.
Let me give you an example.
We have three opinions here. We have Rav Ashi and
Rav Ashi and Rav Nachman. Two opinions of how to reconcile.
What about Rav Judah?
Rav Judah is, that's the Braita. Yeah. That stands. Oh. It's conflict with the Mishnah. How do we reconcile in two different fashions? Now what Rav Ashi says, let me give an example. In the Dallas City ordinances, you're allowed to put out your bulk trash once a month. Is it once a month?
No. Yeah, once a month.
Once a month at a certain time, but you're not allowed to put their nuclear waste. Right? Certain things you don't put out. Never. Right. So that's what Rav Ashi is saying. Ah. Rav Ashi is saying that Rabbi Yehuda said once a month you can put stuff out, but that doesn't contradict the Mishnah, says you can't, because the Mishnah is talking about nuclear waste.
You see, to me it would make sense that you would be allowed to put it once a month out, I'm talking about the straw and the thing, and not be liable, because everybody is expecting that. Just like, you know...
Okay, but Rav Ashi says everyone's not expecting it. Rav Ashi says everyone's not expecting it. They're only expecting non-nuclear waste.
It's slippery.
Because it's slippery, it should not be allowed at any time.
Right. That's Rav Ashi. Whereas Rav Nachman said, no, there's no differences between the different types of waste. It just depends on what month of the year it is, if it's the month that it's allowed or the 11 months that it's not.
So the difference between them, one talks about time and the other about substance.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Good way to say it.
Yes.
Good way. Okay, I guess we're just about finished.
Okay.
And everything worked out well?
Yes.
Oh, we didn't get a chance for the...
To the other sources I brought. That's okay.